Welcome to Hype, episode 184. My name is Selena. I'm joined this week by Pam and special first-time guest to the podcast, Lilani.
Yay! Hello.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for joining us.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
So we want to know, like, obviously you write for Hypeable, and we want to know, like, a little bit about who you are and what you write and what fandoms you like and stuff like that. But I just want to really quickly run through the contact information first so we get that out of the way. So if you guys are not yet, you should definitely follow us on Twitter, because that's where we usually update you on the show and where we get most of our feedback. So that is at Hypeable Hype. We're also on Hypeable itself. That's hypable.com. And if you want to leave us a comment in the podcast section, then just leave it under the most recent episode and we will find it. You can find us on Instagram at Hypeable Hype. You can find us on Tumblr at hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can, of course, also email us. That email address is hype@hypeable.com. Finally, we just want to remind you of our Patreon. If you are interested, you can subscribe to our Patreon over on patreon.com/hypepodcast for $2 a month, and you get bonus features, you get videos, you get giveaways, you get, like, stuff like that. So yeah, that's it. That's all we got. Lilani, tell us a little bit about you.
So I have been on Hypeable, I think, a little less than a year. I think my year is coming up, and I was hired as a movie features writer to mostly, I think, write about kind of comic book movies, and we have a lot of Marvel people on the site, and I do love Marvel, but my heart and soul and what I grew up with is DC, so if there's an article about a DC movie, it's probably by me, and even though I was hired to be a movie features writer, I also do a lot of young adult lit stuff on the site. So my focus is mostly on diverse voices, own voices, debut diverse authors, and it's been actually a lot of fun getting to do that as well. And then I write the odd TV article here and there, mostly about ships. I have I wrote one about how Cabby is just the underrated best on the 100. I wrote about why Jopper needs to get together in season 3, and probably around the time that One Day at a Time season 3 is going to come out, I'm going to put it out there in the universe that Schneider and Penelope should be your slow burn OTP.
Yes.
It's kind of like my guilt OTP, but I just love them. So I'm going to try to sway people over to my side. So yeah, that's mostly what I write about.
Pam, you should read that one. Wink, wink.
I know. It's like, it's so funny because Selena, like, right away caught on, and I was just like, I don't see it, but, like, I probably will see it when they, you know, smack me over the head with it at some point. I just have to turn off my brain and, like, you know, suspend everything.
I mean, my sister and I had this long conversation. She's like, it's just nice to see friends that, you know, are platonic, male and female. I'm like, I totally agree, we need more of them, but I want them to get together. So, like, super slow burn, like, in 2 or 3 seasons, because I want that show to have 6 seasons in a movie.
Yes, for sure. I totally agree. I was totally with you. And we had that conversation. We shouldn't talk too long about One Day at a Time. I feel like we do that enough. But we had that conversation on one of our episodes. I'd only seen season 1. And then Pam was like, yeah, no, and it's so good, like, that argument about, oh, it's so great when they're platonic friends and it's so wonderful. And I was like, yeah, totally. And then I watched season 2 and I was like, uh-oh.
Yep.
Oh, no.
That's exactly where I was at. I was like, I don't feel like I should be shipping it, but I do, and I'm just going to, like, fall into it.
Yes. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that you contribute some shipping stuff to the site, because we should always do more of that. So it's great. I try. I do my part. I did my Maxon article. I feel like that was...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. A big contribution. Okay. So let us move in now to How We Hype, where we tell everyone what we've been doing in fandom this past week. So Pam, why don't you go for... Ooh, this is cool. Why don't you go first? It sounds like a cool thing.
Yeah, I think that, like, you probably forgot about this, but, like, this interview that I have coming up for Hype has been in the works for, like, months, and we were finally able to make it work. So it's taken a while to get here, but in about a week, we're going to be putting up a chat that I had with music composer Siddhartha Khosla, who does the music for Hulu's Marvel's Runaways, and also for This Is Us, which is really cool because, you know, obviously, like, if you, like, watch both of these shows or, like, you tune into even award shows, you're familiar with, like, one theme tune or the other. But he actually started off in bands and stuff like that before Dan Fogelman, who is the showrunner for This Is Us, asked him to do some composing for TV shows. They've known each other since university, which is kind of cool. But some of his original tracks are also featured in both of these shows, like songs that he's written specifically for these shows. So it was really cool to kind of pick his brain about that and, like, how he got into the industry and what inspired him to create, you know, the music that kind of ebbs and flows through both of these shows. So yeah, I hope that you guys enjoy it when it comes out, and it's looking like it'll come out sometime next week.
Awesome.
Sweet. Yeah,
I'm so excited. What was the other thing you had? Plug Spotify? What does that mean?
Oh, yeah, very quickly. I meant to message you about this, but Spotify, we are actually, our podcast is now available to stream via Spotify too. Yeah,
oh,
I've been working on this for months. So it's finally there. They finally accepted us. So now you can actually listen to Hype Podcast via Spotify if you want to, which means that, you know, Spotify is really great. I mean, obviously, like, please subscribe to us via iTunes as well. But Spotify is another really great way to kind of plug the show to anybody that's, like, any of your friends that are, like, following you, because there's so much more of a social media aspect on Spotify, and you can share that. It makes it really easy to share, like, via Twitter or Facebook what you're listening to, but also, you know, like, it lets you share what you're listening to anybody that happens to be following your account as well. So if you are a Spotify user, it's another great way to enjoy our show. And thank you in advance if you decide to do it that way. It was, like, a pretty big little milestone for our show.
Yay. Yeah. And I'm just finding out about it now. I'm so excited. That's so cool.
I literally just found out about it. Like, I forgot that I had submitted again. And then somebody asked me if Hype was available on Spotify, and I was like, no, they never accept us. And then I was like, wait, I actually, like, submitted again. And then I went to check, and, like, lo and behold, third time's the charm. Aww. And they've let us into their little community. So that's pretty exciting.
Yes. Just shows you never give up. You keep submitting to Spotify. Eventually, you'll wear them down. Amazing. So my How We Hype this week is the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. I talked about it on the last episode as well, and I actually was going to wait to talk about it until I had finished it, but I don't have anything else, so I'm just going to, like, preemptively talk about it, and then I can talk about, like, the final couple of books. Have either of you guys read this series?
Okay, I'm very curious to hear what you think of it. So I read the first one, and I was not enamored by it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, like, do the next couple of books, are they better?
Yes.
Okay.
First of all.
I wanted to like it because it's super popular.
Mm-hmm.
But that first one, I thought the world building was cool. I thought, you know, all the characters were interesting. It didn't click for me in a way it did for a lot of other people. But sometimes, like, books series take a while to get going. So do you think the other ones are better than that first one, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I actually, the only reason I read past the first one was because I bought two of them together. And I'm not really sure why I took that kind of a leap of faith. And when I was, like, halfway through the first one, I, like, really regretted it because I felt the same way as you. I thought it was really uninspiring. Like, it was just kind of...
It was kind of uneven.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is. But what I do find really cool about it is now I've read three books and the prequel book.
Mm-hmm.
Because after the first one, I was like, oh, not sure. And this is kind of the love triangle or whatever. But then everyone was like, no, keep reading. Like, Selena is so cool. And I'm like, I was like a sucker for a character that almost shares my name. So that was, like, a big plus for me because that never happens. But yeah, so I feel like the second one, like, improves, like, tremendously. It was super exciting. I still think that one is probably my favorite. It was really riveting, and it expands on the world and the characters in really sort of interesting ways. And then I read the prequel novella series, and those are really good. Like, they're really gripping and sort of evocative. And then the third one kind of takes the story out of where it was set and kind of expands the world a lot. And at this point, and it introduces a new character who is like, so it's a female character, and she is so surprisingly cool. She's super evil and sweet. Really well written. And I'm like, I'm super obsessed with this character. and she gets a dragon. I don't want to spoil it, but it's so cool. And like that, for that part alone, I would say power through them. But no, I'm really hooked. It's not like, I mean, it's not the best thing I've ever read, but it has so many good parts. And I think one of the things that I really like, first of all, you can see her writing style improve, which I think is really, like, just from a craft perspective, mm-hmm. that's really fascinating. And then I also think once, because I read the first two, and then I read the prequel, and then I read book three, and how it all ties together. Like, I don't know if she planned all this from the start, or if she just kind of retroactively made it work, but everything works. Like, the connecting of everything is really, really impressive. So actually, I'm totally on board, and I just powered through, like, the last novel, book three, is 500 pages, and I was just like, I need to know. So I think that's a good sign.
Yeah,
and okay. Wasn't this optioned, too? I know that her Court of Thorns and Roses is also optioned, but this is optioned as well, right, for a TV show?
Yeah, I think it was a few years ago. I think it was HBO, but it was back in, like, 2015, I want to say. So, like, there hasn't been anything new on it for a while, but I could totally see it working. It's very interesting, and it has
I was like, maybe they're waiting for Game of Thrones to be done, and this will be like their next big fantasy epic.
It could be. It's interesting though with HBO, because I don't really feel like it's a really good fit for them. Like, mm-hmm. it would be at home on like Stars or the CW, I feel like, you know, and I mean that like lovingly, but yeah, I guess we'll see. Okay, so Leilani, what do you have for Howie Hype?
Okay, so Cardi B's Invasion of Privacy came out this week, and Cardi B, I feel like I really underestimated her. I mean, I like Bodak Yellow. It was a banger. It was fun, but I didn't really know, and she had been so hyped for so long, so I wasn't too feeling her too much, but I was blown away by her debut album. I just find it kind of this really great mix of like being very raw and real, but also she allows herself to be very vulnerable on it, and just a level of like honesty and authenticity about her and about all her music. And it's 13 tracks, and they're not all necessarily great tracks, but they're all good ones. And to be able to kind of show that level of talent for 13 tracks is really, really amazing. It's a great debut album. I'm really happy she's like the first female rapper since Lauryn Hill to be number one on the charts, and I just, the whole album is just a lot of fun. It's funny, it's introspective, and there are good bangers on it as well, but it's just a really enjoyable album to listen to. It just, like, it makes me want to work out and make money and treat garbage men like garbage, and it's just like a fun time. So if you were thinking that, you know, you're not sure if you want to listen to it, it's a fun, great album. I can't list off any of my favorite lines or lyrics because they're all very obscene, but I just enjoy that about her. I enjoy her, I can't say anything else but her rawness and kind of just being really in your face, but also not being afraid to be vulnerable. And I think that's really cool to see from a female artist and a female rapper. And the other thing is I saw A Quiet Place last night.
Ooh.
And I'm not a big horror movie person, or they're not my number one pick when I go see a movie, but I'd heard such great things about this that I was, I wanted to see it. And it is it's super stressful, but it's just very well shot. It's really great performances. I mean, it's like silence for like 85% of the movie, and it's a lot of close-ups, so you really are there with the actors, and it's just, I was very impressed with John Krasinski's his editing, his direction. He also co-wrote the film, and it's a really great little 90-minute thriller, which just will keep you engaged the whole time, and also has one of the most stressful birthing scenes ever in a movie. It is, it's so intense, and Emily Blunt just deserves all the awards for just this one scene where she's like giving birth in a bathtub, can't scream while a monster is like coming up the stairs.
And, oh my God.
Yeah, it's if you like your horror, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like a monster movie, but it's, the monsters are not really the focus. It's mostly about kind of this family dealing with all these different tensions as a family while there are monsters in the world. And it's just a really fantastic movie. And if you don't like horror movies, I still recommend it. I'm not a big horror movie fan, like I said, but it's just a good movie. So highly recommend.
Oh, cool. I'm like, oh my God, I really want to see it. And I'm like, I also don't like horror, so it's good to know that it's, maybe people have kind of compared it in style to Get Out, like in the way it's more of a suspense,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
I saw it compared somewhere on the internet, on Twitter, and I'm sad that I don't know who said it, but it's like the movie Signs, if Signs were good.
Okay.
And like, I like the movie Signs, but it's a really good description of this film.
Okay, cool. All right, so moving into the news now. The first story in the lineup is a bit of a roundup because there's been so many news about this lately.
Yes, we're inching closer and closer by the day to Avengers Infinity War's big theatrical release, and Marvel is pulling out all the stops, of course, to keep that in the back of your head. We've gotten a lot of new promo material for this movie, but it still hasn't really like given too much away with regards to, you know, the bigger plot points, which is always really nice, especially for these bigger releases where fans are like trying to stay spoiler free. One of the first really exciting things that we got were a slew of character posters for all of these key players that are going to be in this movie. As we've discussed before, it's an ensemble cast, so there are a lot of really big names attached to this. And it was just so cool to see that everybody kind of got their own poster. They're really, really cool. And Andrew, I can tell, had a lot of fun talking about these over on Hypeable.com. Yeah. I didn't even have to click on this story to know that he was the one that wrote it. But yeah, if you want to see them.
Yeah, he has his priorities.
Exactly. I mean, Cap and Bucky's butts aside, all of these posters are really, really great. I really like the purple and blue themes. And you can go and find your fave and set it as your phone background if you want. They're just like really lovely. So definitely something to keep the hype going there. We also got a new TV spot for Infinity War, which is kind of exciting.
Aww.
A lot of the stuff here is stuff that we saw in the teaser trailer, which is fine, but we got a few unseen moments that we hadn't seen before, including a really cute reunion between Bucky and Steve, which is what we're all here for, right?
Yes, the sweet, sweet reunion before it all goes to hell, as we're all sure it does. So yes, sure.
And then finally, our last little bit in this Avengers roundup is a new social media campaign that the Russo brothers put out last week with the hashtag Thanos Demands Your Silence. And this was basically to encourage fans to keep things spoiler free so they don't ruin things for other fans. Because obviously, like, the good thing about Marvel movies is that they tend to come out globally around the same time. Like, this is one of the only times that Selena and I could technically watch movies at the same time and then come back on this show and talk about it. But for the most part, you know, sometimes we can't because Denmark has different release dates than the United States. So they kind of put out this really nice letter where they thanked the fans for their support and mentioned that they're actually not really going to be screening the movie to the masses or even to the press until right before the theatrical release on April 27th. So the spoilers should be few and far between, but If you happen to be one of those lucky people that gets to see it early, don't be a dick is basically what they're saying. And make sure that everybody is able to enjoy this movie, you know, going in spoiler free and experiencing it for the first time without being tainted by, you know, little tidbits that are kind of an integral part of the bigger story they're trying to tell. So we'll see how that works out. It didn't work out so well for J.K. Rowling and her Keep the Secrets campaign.
But, no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is fun. This is kind of a fun, the secrets thing, because it was, I think it, that one came out like on the day I was doing my The 100 preview post, and I was like, I know, I get it. But it is interesting. And obviously it's funny because people are pretty sure they figured out like who's going to die in this movie, mm-hmm. and like generally what's going to happen. But it would be, I would like for them to sort of trick that. If they aren't saying be silent because they don't want everyone to confirm what we already know, but because it's actually something else. But it's also just because I don't want to see Cap die, and I'm like really like pre-traumatized about that. So
I just hope they give him a good death, but not one that's gonna like traumatize us, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't know. I you know, this is like not the same at all. It's like literally apples and oranges, but I just keep thinking back to Breaking Dawn Part 2 where they faked us all and thought that like they actually killed off Carlisle, and then it turned out to be like a vision that never actually happened. But
yeah, actually it's probably a good comparison.
But you know what I mean, right? Like I just don't want like decapitated Cap and like that's it.
Decapitated, the puns would be amazing though. I just want to say one last thing about Infinity War and then we can move on, which is just that it's a really dumb thing, which is about the posters, that I actually, you know, Andrew made a joke about the butt focus, but you know what I actually think it's really cool about these posters is that it seems like they have kind of learned their lesson from, you know, the backlash after the Avengers posters where like all the men were in hero poses and the one woman was with her back to the camera and like daintily, you know. I feel like in this one, it's very equal opportunity showing off your assets and or being in a power pose. Like the women, some of the women, Shuri, for example, has a fantastic poster. And the one who is not Gamora. Why can I never remember her name?
Nebula?
Oh, it is Nebula. Yeah. Nebula. Gamora does too, but Nebula's poster is probably my favorite, actually, just because of the way, like, her pose is my favorite, because she's like, rah, coming to get you. I love that.
Yeah, she looks super badass.
She looks so badass. But so does Shuri, and so does, like, so many of the other characters. And then you do have the, like, some of the women are looking over their shoulder, but then some are the men. Like, it's really good. It's really gender-neutral posters.
I mean, after Black Panther, I don't think that they can go back. There's no way they could have made any of that female cast look dainty and helpless.
Mm-hmm. So. No. But I just like that. That was just what I wanted to say. I thought it was cool.
So, The Hate U Give.
Yes.
So for those who don't know, so The Hate U Give is a tremendously written and tremendously popular YA novel, and it centers around the Black Lives Matter movement, and it has just a ton of stars, has a lot of hype. I'm super excited for it. So earlier this year, one of the stars in the movie, he plays Chris, who is the white boyfriend of Amanda Stenberg's star, who is the main character of the story. So Chris, he was played by actor and YouTube personality Kean Lawley. I have no idea who that is. I don't know who half the YouTube personalities are, but apparently he was a very popular cast. And from what I can see from Twitter, people really like this casting. Well, earlier this year, you know, a video surfaced that he was saying a bunch of these racial slurs, which was super inappropriate in general, but especially given the content of this film. So they dropped him, which I thought was awesome of this film to do. And they have recently recast him with KJ Apa from Riverdale, who I think is a great cast. I was like super pumped to see this. I've watched like 7 total episodes of Riverdale, but my memory of it and what I see of it from my Tumblr and all the gifts that come across my dash, KJ Apa just seems like he would be able to play the very supportive, very nice, white boyfriend. So I'm super excited for this. Do either of you watch Riverdale?
Yes.
Ken does.
Okay. So
I do.
I very much do not.
So my question is, one thing I've read, you know, reaction, and I think he looks great for the part. My recollection is that while I'm sure KJ Apa works very hard and is a very nice man and, you know, really nice person, I don't remember him being the most talented out of the cast, but I don't know if that was just, it was early, this is one of his first roles, like, is kind of a major player in this movie, and KJ Apa is really coming into a movie it's already done, and they're doing a bunch of reshoots, so it's hard for any actor to come into. How do you feel like watching the show, like, is he kind of up to this task?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I actually went to visit the set of this movie in October.
Cool. Okay.
And when we did interviews, Kian was there. Mm-hmm. So we actually saw him shoot some scenes in the press pool that I was in. And given that that was his first role, even if KJ Apa was, like, you know, subpar, I think that just because he has had experience, like, he's going to be as good, if not better, than Kian was. Yeah, I think that the only thing that they need to... I'm trying to say, like, I'm trying to be as, like, diplomatic as possible. I want them to invite me back. Hi, Fox. No, but in all seriousness, I think that they leveled up. I think that especially because Riverdale has such a big following, like,
yeah,
it's only going to bring more eyes to this spectacular story. Like, you, I'm a huge fan of the book, so the more people they can bring in and, like, put in seats at the theaters, the better, because it is a story that, you know, needs to be told. And I think they got really lucky with KJ Apa. I think that, like, a lot of what Archie is in season one, which is probably what you saw of Riverdale, I'm assuming,
yes,
is very
yes.
similar to what Chris is anyway.
Yes.
And he, like, definitely has a meatier part to play as the story progresses. I'm not quite sure how much of that they're going to dive into in the movie, but I hope that they do touch on that because, you know, like you said, they are in this biracial relationship, which ends up making a huge difference as Star kind of goes through this journey in the Black Lives Matter movement. And yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what they end up doing with his role. I think that, like, the only thing he might have going against him is how long he had to build a relationship with Amanda before they started filming, because they were in Atlanta for, like, months with Kian, and now they have, like, this tight turnaround. So if anything's going to hurt that, it's going to be, like, the natural chemistry that maybe they weren't able to build as a cast.
Yeah.
Especially because so much of the story kind of takes place in this high school that Star attends. So that's the only thing, like, I would be worried about. Not necessarily, like, his acting chops, but more just, like, if it's going to feel natural. Because by the time we came in, they were basically on their last week of photography on this movie, and everybody was, like, super comfortable with each other. Like, they looked like real boyfriend and girlfriend as soon as they called action. So
yeah.
I think that's probably, like, the thing that you should be worrying about most if you are, like, a little bit worried, like, listening to this and you're a little bit worried about, you know, whether he's up to the task.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's a rough situation to go into. So, like you said, he's going to bring those Riverdale fans and, again, as many butts in seats as possible for this movie. So I'm super amped, no matter what, about his casting.
So, speaking of movie news, we got a brand new trailer for Solo, A Star Wars Story, aka the story we didn't really need, but we're getting. I can't believe this is coming out so soon, you guys. Speaking of movies that are, like, coming out in theaters very soon, this is actually set to hit theaters next month, and this is our first full trailer, like I said. So we get much more time with, like, all of these characters that we kind of know but we don't really know. In this next look, we get a little bit more of Lando, which I know everybody's really excited about. We get a little bit of Emilia Clarke. We get a little bit more of a feel for who Han is, like, when he starts this journey. And yeah, I mean, like, there's not very much else to say about this. Like, I want to be more excited about this movie than I am. The trailer looks great, but
You know, I really like this one, this trailer. I thought it was like, I'm with you. I'm not at all like impressed or excited, but there was something about the energy of this trailer that I was like, oh, okay, like if the movie's like this, I might actually enjoy it.
I'm like 90% going to see this movie for Donald Glover, so.
Yeah, right.
I feel like that's a lot of people. So, you know, it was nice to see a little bit more of him.
Yeah, and I feel like the trailer knows that. Like, probably why it looks so good is because they were like, oh, look, yeah, it's Han. Yeah, look, it's blah, blah, blah. And here's Lando.
He got two lines instead of just a smile. It's great.
Yeah. I bet they're kicking themselves that they didn't do a Lando solo movie. So they're like retroactively trying to make this one.
Mm-hmm. Also, along with the new trailer, we also got some new posters for the movie. I'm really digging the orange. I really like the color scheme for it. It's just like, you know. And I also kind of like that they played around with the vintage Star Wars posters, which were all portrait style. Like it looks kind of like it would have been painted or airbrushed or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that.
All right, so we're going to move into some Netflix news now. The first story, we continue our The Crown casting saga, because they're obviously replacing all of the actors from season 1 and 2 with older actors to pick up the story later in Elizabeth's life. And so we've just gotten our casting for Prince Philip, you know, the highest paid actor on the show. And he will be, Matt Smith will be replaced by Tobias Menzies, who you know from Outlander. I think this is really cool. Like, I've been so impressed with these castings. Like, everything else aside, like, these new versions of the characters, I feel like, are spot on. We have Olivia Colman playing Elizabeth. I believe we have Helena Bonham Carter is playing Margaret. And now Tobias Menzies as Prince Philip. I think this is really cool. Are either of you guys, like, invested in The Crown?
My sister keeps telling me to watch it. I have not watched it yet.
Okay. It should be interesting.
Yeah, I'm really... I think both of us, Selena, are watching, right? Like, yeah. Thoroughly watching. So, yeah, I'm definitely here for this. But also, I'm a big Outlander fan, and Tobias Menzies did a really great job with the arc that he did on that show. He's basically playing two different characters for the better part of a few seasons. And it's really cool to see him kind of step into another period piece, but in a different role. So I'm really excited to see what he does with it. I think he's a really great actor, and he's just like a really nice guy too. So it's always kind of nice to see nice things happen to good people.
Oh, and he was Edmure Tully. I didn't even realize.
That's right. Yeah. He's done like a lot of these like period kind of dramas before. So they're in good hands with him, and he's going to do great. So,
for sure. All right, and the next blah, the next Netflix story. Wow, that was hard to say. Is very relevant to particularly me and Pam's specific interests. It's another King Arthur adaptation. Yay! This time it is the Frank Miller-helmed series called Cursed. And it will be based on the upcoming book of the same name from Frank Miller and Tom Wheeler. And the Wheeler and Miller will also be co-creating and executive producing this series, which is like kind of a female spin on the King Arthur saga, in that it is set to follow a teenage Nimue who is destined to become the Lady of the Lake. So not the Nimue. We talked about this when we were doing our Merlin special. And there are kind of two Nimues running around in the legends, and one of them is like super evil, and the other one is the Lady of the Lake. And so it's going to be this one. It's going to be like a little bit of an ambiguous heroine, and in this one, she will team up with Arthur on a quest to find Merlin. And I'm immediately like, oh my god, he's back. But obviously, no, this is a different Arthur Merlin, so I have to let it go. And this
never
is
let go.
No, well, never you're right. Go. You're right. I'm holding on again. But this is really interesting. The synopsis is, let's see if there's anything in here that I didn't already just say. She's a teenage heroine with a mysterious gift, and she's destined to become the powerful and tragic Lady of the Lake. So she is basically stepping into that role of a young girl with a destiny that she can't escape, and she finds an unexpected partner in Arthur. So it sounds really interesting, I think. I posted this on Twitter, and I feel like I should just shout out to Kim Shumway, former writer on The 100, who immediately was like, yeah, this sounds great, but like, why is it not women doing this? And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's Frank Miller, right, of all people.
Is that bad? I'm not super familiar.
So he's a comic book writer, and he's done some really great runs. I mean, he did The Dark Knight Returns, he did Batman Year One, he did great things with Daredevil. I mean, he did Sin City. So just a really respected writer in the comics world, and he's done really great things. In more recent years, I would kind of describe him as like a self-righteous, reclusive jackass. So, this sounds like such a cool story, but I'm wary of it in Frank Miller's hands. But maybe, you know, it's not just his project. And at the end of the day, how super involved is he going to be in the show? Like, you know, is he going to write the whole thing? Who else will be writing it? But I do wish that there was some female names attached to it, at least.
Yeah. And again, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's kind of how I'm feeling, is that they can bring in like female directors or female writers or anything like that. But that is a really good point. The thing I think I'm really interested in, as far as he goes, is that, you know, he talked about it being an exciting challenge for him as an illustrator. And I think there's so much potential for this to be a really stunning visual take on the Arthurian legends, because I feel like a lot of all of the interpretations have been really sort of visually straight, if that makes sense. Like, it's very practical, the magic, and it's very sort of, oh, look, this place really existed. Here is Camelot and a forest. Like, it would be cool for this to dive a little bit deeper into the mysterious and into the magical and into the fantastical. So for that reason alone, I would be interested in seeing it. But please bring some women on board. Are you excited about this, Pam?
I think that out of all of the iterations of Arthurian legend we're about to get over the next few years.
Yeah, the cop drama set in New York.
I feel like this one piques my interest a little bit more because, obviously, you know, with things like Mists of Avalon and stuff like that, this is not necessarily the first time that the legends have centered on a female's point of view, but it is kind of the first time that we're getting it in a
adaptation.
Yeah, and an adaptation that's like new. And I think that's what it needs, because a lot of the projects that are in production right now kind of feel a little stuffy because it's not necessarily anything new. Even like, what is I keep wanting to call it like what is it, Guy Ritchie's From Streets to the Throne? Like, that was kind of I always want to say From Streets to the Sheets, but that's not what that movie is. Anyway, yeah, I just kind of think that out of all of them, this piques my interest just because it's got like something a little bit different, even though it is at the end of the day going to be the same tale we kind of know and love. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
So kind of going along with TV issues, The Simpsons recently responded to Hari Kondabolu's The Problem with Apu. And it was, well, first of all, I haven't watched The Simpsons in many years, you know, but I did watch it growing up, and it's part of a lot of people's kind of it's just part of culture. And their response to this criticism of Apu's character was really sucked, basically. And basically they had Lisa just say, you know, something that started decades ago was applauded and inoffensive is now politically incorrect. What can you do? And just this response to a really, really good criticism of this character, you know, it was almost heartbreaking, especially to put it in Lisa's mouth, who has always kind of been kind of a champion of people's rights and of people's dignity. And, you know, it almost changed her entire character to have her be so dismissive and really turn to the audience and be like, you know what, representation isn't all that important, essentially. I don't know if either of you have seen the documentary The Problem with Apu, but it's only like an hour or something. It's really, really good. And in it, you have all these South Asian actors and talking about, you know, just how damaging this characterization of Apu is, and just for the show to be so dismissive of it was really, really deeply disappointing. And again, I haven't watched The Simpsons in years, but it was really upsetting. And I want to read Oh, so on Twitter, W. Kamau Bell said, in terms of, you know, this talking about anti-political correctness argument, it's like saying, I don't get why you're complaining that your toe was stepped on when I never felt my toe being stepped on. What does me wearing steel-toed boots and you not having shoes have anything have to do with anything? And that's said by a steel-toed boot factory owner. And it's just, you know, going, I hate them brushing it off as like, oh, you can't say anything without it being politically incorrect these days. It just, it really simplifies the argument and doesn't even get at it. So, you know, this was a very upsetting thing, but Hari Kondabolu said himself, like, well, my only response to this is that, like, The Simpsons is relevant again for the first time in many years. So,
ouch.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of people, and I think I agree, is just like this kind of goes against what The Simpsons did for many years, which was be very progressive and boundary pushing and kind of go against the status quo. And now it's complaining about people who are criticizing it. So just kind of a very disappointing thing from The Simpsons.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to admit, like, I don't think I've ever seen a Simpsons episode in my life. And, like, I know it's, like, a huge thing. I don't know why it never, like, was on my radar. So, like, this is only thing I have is I've read, like, the think pieces on it. But it is disappointing. It's disappointing when an institution like that kind of shows its true nature in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, just let us. We're above, like, whatever, quote-unquote, social justice stuff you guys are doing. Like, that doesn't apply to us. That's always disappointing when they do something like
that.
Yeah,
so, and it's just
what a shame.
Yeah, it's just this thing where it's like, oh, well, I used to be able to make this joke. Well, then make new jokes, you know? Like, the joke is no longer funny, and it never was. So, you know, be more creative.
Right. So we're gonna stay in the TV lane here with this next story. There's good and bad news, you guys. The good news is that the CW has renewed, like, almost all of its shows, and the bad news is that The 100 is not one of them, and neither is iZombie, and neither is, I think, like, Life Sentence, and that's literally it. So I believe it was last week that we learned the news that they have given early renewals to 10 series, including Supernatural and all 5 of its DC series, which is amazing because it means another year for Black Lightning, which is definitely shaping up to be the far better one, I think, of all of them.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited to see that one renewed. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend has been renewed for a final season. Dynasty, for some reason, I guess because it does well on Netflix, that has to be the only explanation. Jane the Virgin, I believe that's also its final season, at least that's what Gina Rodriguez said. And Riverdale is getting a season 3, Supergirl. And yeah, that's it. So, I mean, first of all, I'm really excited. I'm really excited to hear which shows you guys are most excited about. I think that this is really great because it shows such a tremendous belief from the CW. Like, we know the CW, particularly the Warner Brothers shows, obviously, because of the deal they have, it doesn't really matter how much. Like, the ratings basically don't matter for the CW, is what I'm trying to say. Like, they have other deals in place. But beyond that, it's also just really nice to see them sticking with the shows that they, like, the CW is a little bit more of a family, you know, than I feel like a lot of the other networks. And they do commit to shows and they do let them tell their stories, sometimes for way longer than they should. But most of the time, I think it is a positive thing, also because they're so focused on building fandoms. And I will also just say, in terms of The 100 and iZombie, and I don't know about iZombie. I think that one might be a little bit in trouble, but I'm actually not worried about The 100 because the decision was never going to be made before season 5 premiered. By all accounts, everyone involved with that show would be very surprised if it didn't get renewed, let's put it that way. So I think as far as The 100 not being a part of this, like, I really don't think that says anything one way or another. We just have to wait for May because that is when the decision will be made, or at least made public. So so let's table that one for now and focus on the other ones. Which ones of these are you guys excited to see? And are there anyone that you're surprised got renewed, like Dynasty?
I didn't even know that was still on. So
I know.
I was like, oh, Dynasty got renewed. That's still a show. But I'm super excited that Black Lightning got renewed. And I'm also really excited, even though it'll be what seems to be their last seasons, that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Jane the Virgin got renewed. First of all, I like that both these shows seem to have, like, you know, a beginning, middle, and end plan for themselves, which, you know, means that they're going to wrap it up well. And just the CW's kind of, like, commitment to good storytelling and to taking chances and to, like, taking on shows that other networks wouldn't necessarily take or renew.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I like, too, about the CW is that I feel like, with very few exceptions, they do tend to give final seasons when they're ending shows. I think the only, like, recent exception was Rain, you know, and that did get a chance to finish out its run because it hadn't shot its finale when they got the announcement, as far as I remember. So, like, it also is just a nice show of respect to those shows that they're like, okay, well, we're ending you, but finish your story.
Yeah, it's not going to be like, oh, you'll never know how things end up.
Yeah. Right. Do you have anything to say on any of these, Pam?
Yeah, I think that you're right. I mean, like, sometimes we as fans don't know things that, like, you can always kind of guess. But like, something like The Vampire Diaries, for example, we didn't realize it was the last season until they came back from their, I think, mid-season break that last season. And that's okay, because, like, you know, you kind of know when things are going to fizzle out. I am a little surprised. I mean, I don't know why I'm surprised anymore, but I am surprised that Supernatural is going to live to see another season. That's, like, the show that's never going to die. But, yeah, I think that out of all of them, I am a little surprised that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is going to end. Not because I don't agree with that decision. I'm sure, like you guys were saying, it's like a storytelling plan. But just because this is kind of like at the height of its popularity, they're taking the show on tour to various cities. So it's kind of, that is now a farewell tour. But it is kind of surprising that they're gonna end on a high note, which is not usually what you get. A lot of times the CW will let things live on for too long and it fizzles out and it's really, really awkward for everybody. So there's something to be said about bowing out gracefully, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, not really having to do with TV, but To All the Boys I've Loved Before is a YA novel by Jenny Han, and it's one of my favorites. And it is about a Korean-American girl living in North Carolina, I believe, and she falls in love, and there's all these shenanigans. It involves fake dating, which is one of my favorite all-time romance tropes. And I was super amped when this was adapted for film, and they recently announced that Netflix had bought the rights, and more recently announced that it's getting an August 17th release date, and that is also the same day that the movie Crazy Rich Asians comes out in theaters. So that's just going to be a day about Asian Americans falling in love, and I am super amped for it. I'm just really excited to see, you know, non-white people falling in love and having a good time on screen.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Yeah.
I really loved this book, too, by the way. Like, it's great that it's also like, it's so funny because we rarely get young adult novels that feature minority leads that don't have to be like quintessentially whatever minority they are. Like, they just like let the characters breathe. And that's something that this book does really well. But also, like, Jenny Han is Asian, so it makes sense, you know, but I always like recommend it because a lot of people ask me, you know, like, are there any like, young adult books with like minority leads that aren't like, oh, like I live in the projects because I'm black, or like my parents are undocumented because I'm Hispanic. And so, yeah, it's always kind of nice to have this in the back pocket to be like, have you read this? Because that fits like all of the boxes. But if you haven't read this yet, it's like the sweetest little story, and
oh,
it'll give
God,
you like
so
all
good.
The warm fuzzies, and it's so good. Yeah. So I'm really excited to see the movie. But if you haven't read the book, 10 out of 10 would recommend.
Yeah, and it's a series of three books, and they're just all a lot of fun. And like you said, you know, it's I love reading diverse stories, but a lot of times it focuses a lot on like suffering and pain, and you know, it's just I want to also see like minority leads fall in love and be the hero and like shenanigans, and that's what this book is definitely, this whole series is that. So we all get to see Laura Jean and her sisters just be teenagers and have a good time. And it's just going to be a great film. And I plan on watching it over and over again so that Netflix just eventually adapts all my favorite YA novels.
Awesome. Do you want to do the last story in the doc, Pam?
Yes. If you are not already buried under the mounds and mounds of different Harry Potter book editions that you undoubtedly have in your possession, then you can add a few more to your list. Or, you know, just bury yourself even further, because we're actually going to get some special 20th anniversary Harry Potter editions. Scholastic revealed these covers actually earlier this week, so not long before we recorded this show. And actually, I do have to admit that out of all of the recent covers, I actually kind of like this best. It's really nice, detailed artwork. And yeah, it's really pretty. I wish I had space for all of these cool editions, but I don't. So if you do, you know, that's something maybe that you might think about picking up.
Yeah, I'm so over this Harry Potter cover stuff. Like, it's too much. But these are very cool. I will give them that. But like, the words inside are the same, so I don't care.
Yeah. I'm actually like, the only thing I'm planning on picking up from this point forward is the illustrated editions, because I think that they're just lovely. And one day if I ever have kids, it'll be just nice to have those. You know, they'll be like the family copies or whatever. But
come on, they can listen to the story and see it in their head, Pam.
I know, but it's just so nice.
Imagination.
You know? I know. But yeah, these are just like, they're pencil.
Oh my God, I love Voldemort.
Yeah.
And I'm so like, sorry. Did you see Voldemort on Deathly Hallows?
But there's so much detail too. Like you kind of have to look at these for a while to see everything, and they all kind of make one big cohesive photo. This is like a great etching too of like Dumbledore. It's like one of like the closest to, you know, what I imagine.
Okay,
Dumbledore,
but
it's great. It's good.
But Voldemort though,
I know.
Like, guys.
I can actually hear him. Like, I see it and I can hear him, you know. It's great.
Oh my God. That's terrible though. The rest of it is good. Dumbledore is really good, I do agree. And the very hot centaur that they have on Order of the Phoenix. Oh my God, I had not properly looked at these until just now. I'm sorry, I'm like having a moment. Who in Goblet of Fire? Oh, those are the champions. Oh, I thought it was Neville and Luna. Never mind.
It also looks like questions. Somebody's, I know it's like the egg, like the golden egg, but it looks like somebody's clutching their pregnant belly in the bottom right hand corner.
Oh yeah.
Teen pregnancy so at funny. Hogwarts, you guys. That's the subplot you missed.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you guys can check all those out over in Hypeable and come laugh about Voldemort with me. He has never looked less scary. So we're going to move on now to TV show of the week, where we tell you what we've been watching over the past couple of weeks. And I guess I'll go first. I have two, so I'll save one of them for the end. So I'll go with The Magicians first, which is a show that you all know. I don't need to tell you that. I have been... Because I'm so busy with The 100 at the moment, I have The 100 coming out of both ears, so I desperately needed to watch something different. And one of the things that I watched, aside from catching up with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I'm going to save for a future week because it's so good, but one of the things I actually watched was The Magician Season 1. And it's funny, I've watched the whole season of it. I am not sure that I like this, but it is very pretty. The set design is astonishingly good. Like, I know that's a weird thing to mention, like this quote-unquote adult Harry Potter. I know Kyle loves this show, and I guess like all the sex kind of probably helps with that, I would guess, because that tends to be the shows he likes. Like, no shade, it's just truth. But I think it's so interesting, and if either of you guys have watched it, I would be curious to hear your thoughts as well. But of the main characters, like, not to, like, again, my head is very much in The 100 right now. So when I watch this, it's almost like I'm like, okay, so this is what The 100 would be like if Finn was the main character and Clark was, like, the worst possible version of herself and Octavia and Lincoln were, like, incredibly, like, flat and stereotypical. And I don't even know who like the last two would be, but like basically, yeah, it's just not. I think it's just not like the level of detail so far in the way these characters are presented, and the likability or like anti-likability of the lead character is really, really getting to me. Like, I do not appreciate this lead character.
Quentin, right?
Quentin, yes. Okay. Or as they call him, Quentin, which is driving me insane. Julia, the character, another character who like doesn't get into Break Bell's the magic school, and you're like very enraged on her behalf, and you actually find out why, and it turns out to be a really satisfying reason. I love her. I love her. I think she's fantastic. She's definitely like the reason I stuck around. I've heard it gets better. Like, I've heard season two is much, much better, and I'm like now starting season two, so I'm excited to see that. I think it is like, it's so funny as well, coming off of a show like The 100, which is so micro scrutinized in terms of like its morality and in terms of the way it portrays people and in terms of the way, and like not to say that that's a bad thing, I think that's absolutely a good thing, but it's really jarring to go from a show that is held up to such an incredibly high level of scrutiny and then go to something like The Magicians, which basically falls into all the tropes like you can possibly think of, and I'm like, did anyone care? Like, you know, like, is anyone like, was the outrage there? Like, did I just miss it because I wasn't in the fandom? So that's like on my mind. And then also, Quentin needs to be better. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to stand it. And that's all I got.
I read the book and I thought the world building was really cool. So that's probably like similar to the set design. But yeah. I could not stand Quentin. Like, like the whole book, I was like, I cannot go on with this man. Being, yeah. Like, describing him as Finn is such a great way to put it, because he is kind of the worst. And but I've heard that, like, I think there's a sequel. There's like two or three books after the first one, and I've also heard like, oh, they're much better. So, you know, I couldn't get past Quentin, and so I never read them. I was like, if he's still the main character, I don't know if I can do it. But I'd be really curious. I love the world building so much, so I'm really curious to hear what you think about the second season. Because if you say, like, it really does get much better in the second season, I probably will kind of pick it up. Because I've kind of kept it on my radar, because it seems to hit all the things that I would enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like with Quentin, it's such an easy fix, because he is such a stereotypical white guy savior, like hero complex, like it has to be me, you know, like the Harry basically, like of, oh no, I'm coming into this world and I can do all these things and I'm special and I'm chosen. And the narrative kind of leans into that a little bit. And I feel like the easiest fix would be to just be like, you know what? No, like you're not, like, this is ridiculous. Stop being like,
yeah,
stop like putting yourself on a pedestal. Right. Just be a person and stop expecting that you are the chosen one. So I have a sense that that's where the story is going, which is good. Yeah, so that's all I had to say on The Magicians. I am still watching, so I'll keep you guys up posted. What do you have, Pam?
I've been watching a lot of Netflix. I feel like every time we do this show, I'm like, oh, I've been watching this Netflix show. I've been watching that Netflix show. I finally finished Series of Unfortunate Events Season 2. Out of all of the shows that Netflix puts out, this is the one, like, and I know there are only two seasons, so it's not saying much, but this is the series that I watch the slowest. And I don't mind, because it's just so nice to kind of like, you know, watch an episode a night. I really, really like this show. I was a really big fan of the first season. I think that they did a great job with the second season. And it's just, you know, speaking of world building, it's so rich, the set design and the costumes and all of these like zany characters and stuff like that. It's like, but it's so cool. And I really just enjoy it. Neil Patrick Harris is back as Count Olaf, of course. And they also have some newer faces in this as well. More specifically to maybe the interests of some of our listeners, Nathan Fillion is in this and he's great in it. But yeah, it's just like, it was such a good season and I'm so excited for the third season. It's like the last season. They've split this up really, really nicely. It's like two episodes per book and there's 12 books, I think, in the series. So
It's kind of like a movie for each book, if you think about it that way. But yeah, it's really great. If you haven't checked this out yet, I highly recommend it. I really, really love this show.
Cool.
My show is also a Netflix show, but it it has three seasons on right now, but it's from like 2011, and it comes out of New Zealand, and it's just this kind of weird little sci-fi fantasy dramedy called The Almighty Johnsons. And, you know, speaking of, Selena, you were talking about kind of chosen one narratives. This one kind of has a chosen one narrative, but I like the way they kind of they use it. So basically the setup of this weird little show is that thousands of years ago, the Norse gods decided to, like, walk among people for whatever reason and, like, incarnate into human beings. And then 140 years ago, they decided to flee Norway because of, like, religious persecution from the Christians. And they decided to flee to New Zealand. And there they, like, lived out their lives, and they had all these kids. And basically, the Norse gods are reborn in random people living in New Zealand. And the story focuses on four brothers who are all gods. And they're Norse gods, but because the power has been diluted for so long, they have powers, but they're, you know, kind of, they're minor powers. So, for instance, the oldest is Ullr, the god of the hunt and games, and that just means that he can never lose a game. So whatever game he plays, he can always win. And basically, it's just kind of a family drama comedy, and there are four brothers, and the oldest one is Mike, and he's like the dad of the group because their parents left them, and he dresses like a Texas rancher who loves Bon Jovi. And then the next one is Anders, and he is a grade A dick, and his power, he's broggy, and his power is that he can basically persuade people to do whatever he wants. And then the next one is Ty, who dresses like a fancy goth, and he is the god of all things cold and dark. And then the youngest, they find out when he turns 21, which is when you get your god powers, that he's Odin, and his quest is to find Frigg, who is like his soulmate. So it's just like following these four brothers as they help their youngest brother try to find Frigg. And mostly I like it because I love stories about families who fight a lot and don't always get along, but always try to support each other at the end of the day. And that's a lot of what this show is, set on a background of fantasy and gods. And it's just a fun show. It's like a B-movie show. It's nothing too deep, but all the character relationships are a lot of fun, and I'm on season three right now, and just really enjoying it. So if you want something to kind of, that's not going to stress you out too much and has a fun bit of world building and characters that are really like nice to follow, I would suggest this one.
Cool. That's a very nice, different recommendations. That's the Almighty Johnson.
Yeah.
Almighty. Almighty?
Almighty.
Yeah. Almighty Johnson's, yeah. Cool. And then finally, before we move on, I just briefly wanted to mention, I don't really have anything to say because, like, I can't, but the 100 season 5 embargo for the first four episodes of the season has been lifted, and I have an article over in Hypeable telling everyone what to expect from it. And I just wanted to say that these episodes are so good. They are very, very good. I was, I've been talking to some of the other journalists who've seen them, and, like, pretty much universally, people are like, oh my god, this is the 100, like, at its full potential, if that makes sense. Like, we're all like, okay, this is the show as we feel like it should be. And I don't mean to, like, hype it up too much, but I also don't mind doing that because I feel like it's legit. So, like, just get excited. It premieres on April 24th. And
I'm so excited.
I might be doing, like, oh my god, you should be. Like, it's
super excited.
Yeah. It's very, very cool to see what they chose to do with this time jump, because it could really have gone either way. Like, it could have been, okay, let's just, like, start over. Or it could be, okay, so let's, like, double down and commit to all these things and heighten them and make them feel more and be more and evolve into more. And I feel like that's exactly what they've done. So it's very, and it's, there's a lot of, like, surprises, but not, like, in a too jarring way. I think they've done really well with sort of Like, I don't think people know, like, people seem to think they know what's coming, and I don't necessarily think that that's true. So I think, like, everyone, like, should just kind of take a breath and let the story play out, because, yeah, I think people are jumping to some interesting conclusions. So, yeah, we shall see. It's been very fun to follow the fandom conversation and to sort of be able to compare that to when the episodes have aired will be very interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that premieres on April 24th, and I'm going to try to do some more preview posts if I have time, but we'll see. Lalani is, of course, also welcome to write whatever you want about it, and I look forward to your maybe some think pieces once the episodes have aired. It will be interesting.
Yeah, I've heard so many good things, and like a lot of comparisons to kind of the best episodes of season 2, which is my favorite season.
Yeah.
And I've actually tried to stay away from spoilers as a whole, which has been really hard, actually. And I'm just so ready. I'm like excited to what I do know about kind of the utilization of the time jump and everything. I'm just like ready to see characters interact that I've never interacted before. And I'm super amped.
Yes. Yeah. Like my, I just did an interview with Luisa de Oliveira, I believe is how you say her name, a couple of days ago. And she plays, obviously, Amori. And she is one of my, like, I'm not giving anything away, but she's one of my two favorite characters of these episodes. She is
fantastic.
Really, really great this season. And she is so excited. Like, it's so fun. I have to hold the interview until after episode 1 has aired, because we talked about some of the stuff in that episode. But she is just like, you can just feel how happy she is about the season and about her character and stuff like that. And I think that's always a really good sign, when you can feel the enthusiasm mm-hmm. sort of ebbing off the actors, you know?
And that's kind of like what it's been like with all the actors.
They've been so excited.
Yeah, so to see that kind of like level of excitement from them and from the writers and just everyone involved, I'm like super ready for it.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move into listener feedback now, and we have a bunch of tweets, and we have a comment, and we have an email. So Pam, do you want to get the comment from hypable.com?
Sure. This one's from Babs B, who says, thanks for the recommendation of Potterless Podcast, Pam. It's so funny when I read comments that have my name in them.
I like it when that happens.
I just finished episode 3 and I'm hooked. I love revisiting the books. Now I want to reread them, but I don't have time. Story of my life, Babs. I feel like it. But I'm glad you're enjoying it. I really loved listening to that on my way to LA. So
yeah. Okay, so let's go through the tweets. I'm going to take the first one. Lalani can take the second one, and then Pam can take the third, and then we'll just carry on from there. So Amanda Miller says, at Selena, it happened again. So I just started binging The 100 last night because I was too curious after hearing you talk about it on Hype. It only took me forever. And oh my God, why is everyone dying? Is the whole series this emotionally draining? I'm only on episode 6. Who will be left? Yeah.
It is that emotionally
that's
draining.
That's fair. It is. That is a good, like, that should be its tagline, The 100, emotionally draining.
Well, episode 5 is The Culling, too, which is most emotionally draining moments.
Yes. Yeah, but also the best.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. When you've gotten to The Culling.
That's when I committed. I was like, well, now this show is my whole life.
Yeah, it's too bad. All other shows, sorry. Exact same. Like, that was the episode. And I feel like when people have gotten past The Culling, I feel like it's pretty, they're safe for a couple of seasons mm-hmm. at least. Because that is the episode where I feel like everybody who might be a little bit skeptical about the pilot is like, oh, okay, something else is going on here. And I mean, not everyone dies, Amanda. Don't worry. It's fine. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. I hope you're still watching.
So this next one is from Janeth Gutierrez. Thanks to Hype, I started listening to Potterless Podcast over the weekend and I'm now on the Goblet of Fire episodes.
Nice. Another one. We're all our listeners are merging over to Potterless, Pam. What
don't forget about us.
We're on Spotify now.
We're on Spotify too now. All right, we also have a tweet here from Marie who says, totally agree about John Green, did not like Turtles all the way down at all. The SW fanfic metaphor subplot
Star Wars.
Oh, got it. And hated Looking for Alaska. I liked The Fault in Our Stars, though. Also, for the first time Potter readers, I recommend Lily C. Reads on YouTube. I love her videos. She's up to Goblet of Fire now. That's kind of cool.
That is awesome. We have a couple of tweets from Betty Anderson, who writes, I love John Green, but I feel just that way about Sarah J. Maas's books. Oh, well, there you go. I was so wrapped up in the hype, and I really expected to love them, but after reading two books from each of her series, I realized I really disliked them and finally gave up. And by the way, have you guys read V.E. Schwab's books? Vicious and the Shades of Magic trilogy are some of the best books I've ever read. I highly recommend them. I'm also surprised to hear that Lady Bird hasn't premiered in Denmark. It premiered in Sweden about a month ago, and I absolutely loved it. I hope you go see it when it finally premieres. I'll stop tweeting at you now. No, never stop tweeting at us. Thank you for all those tweets. You know, it's so funny about those premieres, because they do kind of premiere, but very limited. Like, I think I was looking to see Lady Bird, and I was like, okay, next showing, next showing, next showing, like, just kept hitting the button, and finally there was like one in some tiny cinema, like way out of town, at like 8 in the evening, and I was like, okay, well, I can't do that one. And then I was like, okay, next screening, and then like nothing else happened. So I haven't checked for it in a while. I get really annoyed about this, like, way of, like, you know, so I don't go on their website a lot, but I'll find a way to watch it, you know, at some point. I'm glad you loved it.
Have either of you read V.E. Schwab's books?
No, have you?
Yeah, so one of my favorite authors, Shades of Magic, is a really good fantasy series. Like, her world building is just insane and wonderful. And then Vicious is kind of contemporary, I guess, or modern day, and it's about basically almost like two supervillains who are against each other, and she just finished writing the sequel, and if you like fantasy, I would really highly recommend either one of them.
Awesome. Do you want to get the Shelley tweet?
Sure. I started watching One Day at a Time, yay, recently after hearing you guys gush about it. I wasn't sure at first. Sitcoms with laugh tracks are usually not my thing, but it's charming and deals with surprisingly modern topics. I'm hooked.
Awesome. So are we. Okay, and that brings us to our email that we got from Laura Morrow, and it, oh, look who it landed with. It's Pam.
Surprise, surprise. Laura writes, so I have to share my awesome fandom day with somebody, and I felt like you both would love my fandom day. I had to wake up rather early to get a wristband to the Chrissy Metz from This Is Us book event. Oh, yeah, that's right. She's in This Is Us. Laura continues, she was going to be signing her book and talking with the actress that plays Beth. Then I went to go see Love, Simon. I adored that movie so much. It made me cry and laugh. I read the book like years and years ago. The funny part of my movie watching experience is that I could not for the life of me remember the name of Blue. The one thing I loved about reading the book, I need you to move your cursor. I can't see.
Sorry.
The one thing I loved about reading the book was the mystery of who he was. So I totally got to fist bump it. The air when it came out who was who. Also, a fun fact in the book world is Leah on the Offbeat, who was in the movie played by Hannah from 13 Reasons Why, will have her own novel sequel to Simon out this May. This is a solid adaptation for what I remember of the book, but now I want to reread it. Then the event for the Chrissy Metz book was awesome. She's so lovely in person. I loved hearing about her life and also about her casting story for This Is Us. She signed my book and I got to talk to her. I highly recommend the book or the audiobook because she reads it herself. I hope both of you are doing well. Laura, that sounds like an amazing day. Aww. Thank you for writing in and sharing with us.
I love that, like, a day in the fandom life email. That's so great. Thank you so much to everyone for writing into us. Don't forget, if you're listening to this and you have something to contribute, or if you have some recommendations for us or anything like that, you can email us, like Laura did, hype@hypeable.com. Share your fandom day with us. You can tweet us @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com, and leave a comment in the podcast section under 184. And don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Spotify. Not YouTube, iTunes. I messed that up. You guys know what I mean. Spotify is what is most important. I'm still excited about that. And if you are interested in checking out our Patreon, then you can head on over to patreon.com/hypepodcast and sign up for $2 a month. And this week's bonus segment is going to be continuing our Merlin rewatch. Finally, we're going to be doing a commentary for the Lancelot episode. I'm so excited. This is the one where everyone is in love with Lancelot, and it's going to be so funny.
And rightly so.
And I mean, yeah.
Look at him. He's a dreamboat.
So thank you so much to Leilani for joining us. Yay. This was so much fun. We loved getting your input, and we'll definitely have you back for a future episode. Maybe if we do like a 100 special for the first episode or something, you can come back and talk about that.
That would be amazing. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Of course. And you can read Leilani's stuff over on hypeable.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at something Cypher. What is it?
Leilani Cypher, and Cypher is spelled C-Y-P-H-E-R.
Right. Okay, until next time, have a wonderful week, everyone. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
My name is Leilani.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.